I realize that that trauma or that those problems are not mine, but I'm trying to be this hero, right? This people pleaser to help them. And I realize that, you know, I need to stay in my own lane and that I need to also create the boundaries for myself to say no. And that for me, these last few years have been so hard to do. And the hardest shift for me, and I'll be very honest, is how do I carry that into motherhood?
Welcome to the Shit We Don't Tell Mom podcast. This is Christy.
And this is Angie. And we're here to chat about the uncomfortable shit we secretly want to talk about as Asian millennials. Okie dokes. So welcome to another episode of Shit We Don't Tell Mom. Today we have Tam Tran joining us. She is a Vietnamese American born and raised in the Bay Area. She loves being outdoors, playing sports, going on food adventures, which I love, with her two little dudes. Besides raising little humans and working in corporate marketing, she is also a wellness coach helping first-gen Americans overcome stress and anxiety naturally. Her biggest hope is that the taboo-ness of mental health and stigma will be gone by the time her kids start growing up. So welcome to the show, Tam.
Thank you, Christy. So great to be here. Super excited. Just, you know, this is a really topic that's near and dear to my heart and just excited to dive in with you both.
Something I really wanted to chat with you about, Tam, is I was going to say new parent, but I don't know, a young, how do
young
we say
mom.
That? Young mom, yes.
Young mom. Mm-hmm.
So we're like in that generation of raising new families, young families. And I've been curious because I am someone who's working on my own mental health and then trying to get my mom involved in it. And it sounds like you have done a little bit of work on that too with your parents. How do you do that work with your family from the older generation, but also start instilling some of that wisdom to your kiddies as well? Being in that middle generation, so to speak, like what is that like for you?
Yeah, my journey started probably about a little over a decade. It was definitely at that time, very much huge stigma about speaking up about having depression and any type of anxiety, really. And, you know, I was going to therapy for a number of reasons, but, you know, I wanted to just really work on myself because I felt that, you know, I graduated from college, had a really great paying job, but I just didn't feel fulfilled or happy. And I think that part really just kind of sparked me and said, hey, you know what? Something's going on, something much deeper, a lot of trauma that I just don't think I really sorted through. So I decided to go to therapy. So that's where I started. And when I was in therapy, a lot of the topics that came out was from a lot of the unresolved trauma of childhood that I just didn't, you know, have a safe space to process. And that for me was kind of the catalyst to say, this really needs to change. Like I need to speak up about my story. So I thought I should tell my parents about this. And so I remember the day and time when I had my dad, we were getting lunch and I, you know, openly said to him, I said, this is really hard for me to share, but I wanted to know, like, I'm going to therapy right now. And, you know, I just started to like cry. And immediately he was just like, what do you mean? Like, and he kind of took it like the wrong way. He kind of took it where he just said like, well, what did I do wrong? Like it almost offended him because he's like, you know, I did all these things like, and it became more about him than it was about me. And at that point in time, I just kind of started like withdraw and retract about what I wanted to share. And I got scared. You know, I got scared about, you know, maybe this is a thing that maybe something's wrong with me. You know, I took it as part of my identity. Like I wore it like almost like a badge, like, oh, something's wrong with me. And I just shut down after that. And it was like the stigma that my parents and my dad actually just placed on mental health that I actually stopped going to therapy.
I find it really interesting that, you know, your dad's first reaction was kind of self-focused and self-protecting.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? What did I do wrong? Like, you know, I think you use the term defense as well, right? Especially when in a moment you're being vulnerable about you. About yourself, you're trying to share an experience that you are going through, but his reaction and the way he had interpreted the story was like an attack on him.
Instead. Totally, yeah. And at that time, you know, I was in my early 20s. I didn't really have the language to help him understand. And obviously, like, being Vietnamese American, like, I was trying to translate this, like, halfway, like, in English, right? Like, half Vietnamese, half English, right? And they're like, he was just like, okay, I don't really understand. He knew what therapy meant, but he didn't understand why I was seeking external help for it versus, like, going to him and telling him about what was going on. And, you know, I wanted to have, like, a neutral perspective about why I was, you know, emotional and, you know, borderline depressed. And I think he was, like, the external help and me going in that direction really offended him.
Mm. Yeah. It was almost like, okay, I don't know if this is related at all, but when you said keeping it inside, like keeping it internal, it reminded me of how some families in some Asian families, and I'm sure other in other cultures as well, mental health is not something that is discussed at all. And if there is anything, quote unquote, like wrong with your mental health, then you keep that within the family. Like, you're not going to go out and tell everybody about it or like go out and seek therapy, because now that's like external. Now you're exposing your family's like dirty laundry, so to speak, right? So it, you know, the way that, I don't know if that's related at all to your story, but it reminded me of how we try to keep this thing like within the household, like literally within the boxes of the four walls, so that other people cannot find out, you know?
Exactly. Oh my God, Christy, I'm getting like chills as you say that, because I literally could hear my parents' voice, like, don't air out our, like, you know, our drama to other people, because, you know, it's shameful, you know? And it was the shame, I think, that they felt that I was, again, like going out telling random strangers about the problems, that they're like, oh my God, they must think I'm horrible parents or blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever, what that mental chatter that was going on. Totally getting chills right now, because that's exactly what happened for them, you know? And I, you know, was young, like I didn't know exactly like how to process all of that. So I just kind of retracted and I stopped going to therapy after that. And it wasn't until maybe a decade later, after having my first son, Lucas, where I fell into like very deep postpartum depression. Mm. And I knew like right then and there, like this is not the type of emotion and baggage I wanted to carry into a new relationship with my son. And that was like, for me, I said, I ultimately want to have a different relationship, but I can't do that if I have, and I don't know what the right words are right now, but like I didn't want to raise my kids the way that my parents raised me. And there's nothing wrong with my parents, the way they raised me. You know, they did the best they could. You know, they immigrated from the Vietnam War, came here, you know, didn't speak a lick of English, and they raised three kids, you know, perfectly well and gave us everything we needed, but lacked the emotional support because they just didn't have those tools and resources like we do now. And mm-hmm. So I said to myself, as a mom, you know, I definitely want to have a different relationship, but that relationship begins with me. And that was the thing that, you know, the last 4 or 5 years I've been working to repair, which is a relationship to myself.
I think that's really brave and really wise for you to come to the realization that, hey, like, I don't know if this is the right word, like you said, you were looking for the word, but I don't want to be that, I don't want to continue this, like, I don't want my son to inherit the intergenerational trauma that I had. I want to at least reduce whatever I can so that things are easier for him. And mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, our job as that kind of middle generation, now I don't have any kids, but when I do think about my future children, if there are any, is that the best thing that we can do for them is to kind of instill that value and knowledge that, hey, like, mental health is extremely important. Your own health comes first. Whereas for mm-hmm. our parents, they wanted to instill in us, like, work hard to make sure your security comes first. And that generational gap is huge, and it's really difficult for them to understand. And sometimes, like, as you're saying this, I wish they could understand that when you go out and seek help to make the next generation better, it means your parents did a good job raising you.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was a way for us to communicate that.
Yeah, other than using Google Translate, I haven't quite figured out how, you know, to be like, how do I translate like all that to them in a way that the language in which they can speak? It brings me back to, like, you know, the five love languages, right? And for them, it was very much a I'm going to provide the security and the physicalness of this reality to you, making sure you have a roof over your head, you're fed, and you're safe, right? But for me, I think my emotional need and love language was very much, you know, words of affirmation. And it came from a place of insecurity, you know, and I didn't realize that until pretty recent that the love language of words of affirmation really is to speak up and be open about whatever it is that you're going through. Because it's not only something that our kids can learn from, but I wanted to understand them and why they were the way they were. And I think to some degree, despite the success that they have had, they still are in this scarcity mindset that, hey, you know, I'm still kind of operating from the lens of being still, you know, I'm in the Vietnam War still, and they still lack that security even after giving us everything that they have wanted and that they also have. They are like in a place where they just don't have the ability to be satisfied and happy with what they have. And for me, you know, and where I'm going with this is that basic security and what you just said, Angie, and like also the safety net, you know, is what creates a space for people to openly talk up, you know, speak up and talk openly about, you know, these mental health challenges. And that's part of the my mission and passion around, you know, destigmatizing mental health. It's through not just our stories, but normalizing our emotions and saying, you know, I feel depressed today and there's nothing wrong with me, but I just feel this way, you know, and just creating that safe space for people. So that's kind of where I've been in it. And I wish I could create that for them in their language, but it's been very much a barrier.
Have you tried to communicate that with your family? Because I totally relate with the whole Google Translate thing. I do that with my mom all of the time because we don't talk about mental health ever, right? So I didn't learn those terms. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say certain things or express certain emotions using that language because it wasn't used. I wasn't taught that language. Yeah. So I feel you with the Google Translate. Have you told your parents about that or at least attempted to?
Honestly, no. I think after my first episode of being vulnerable with them and sharing that, I kind of retracted from that. And I think it's because I'm afraid of hurting them. And I haven't quite found the right words to be able to have that, you know, conversation, because I think for them, there's also a lot of unresolved, super suppressed emotions that are still lingering that they just don't even, I think that they don't even understand or possibly be even aware of. So they're almost like still stuck in their heads about how they feel. And at this point, like, I've just learned to become more at peace with what has happened and knowing that that cycle of what has happened with my family, it ends with me. And there's this beautiful like Instagram picture, I have to look it up, but there's literally a shield where everything that how they were raised, they kind of pass it on, right? And they have passed that on to me. But parts of that I don't want to pass on to my kids because I don't want them to ever be afraid to be themselves. And that for me, like stigma free is truly like, how can we just be ourselves and be fully free to express and be in that space, you know, and feel that the world is not going to reject us or judge us, you know, for who we are and how we act and what we believe in. Because everyone's right to how they feel. But in today's day and age, when we speak up, there's so much of that stigma. And I'm like, you know, how can I do that? And the only way I know how to do that is to be the living proof of that and embody those qualities for my kids.
Yeah. And see, this is why we connected, because that's the whole reason why Angie and I started the podcast, right? We were like, everybody's got shit. Everybody has got their own stories and traumas and vulnerabilities and emotions that we don't like to display outright because we're afraid of judgment, because we're afraid of being stigmatized. And so Angie and I are like, well, then we should do it. We should start talking about our feelings and talking about our mental health and whether they are our wins or sometimes not so wins. And hopefully two things come out of that is, one, it normalizes these types of conversations, first of all. And then second of all is, hopefully it might encourage others to do the same, to be a little bit more open about their own vulnerabilities and feelings, mm-hmm. and their own mental wellness.
Yeah. And I think one of the other great things about having these conversations, people are like, oh, yeah, these conversations are had everywhere. But I think it's really important that we continue them, because you were both saying how like, oh, you don't have this language to talk to your parents about it. I didn't even have the language to talk to myself or to my friends about it, like even in English, because I had no idea what emotions are or like what feelings are. I didn't even know that emotions and feelings are two different things. Like, this is all stuff that I had to learn, well, with me, for myself. I learned with the help of a therapist how to actually communicate with my own thoughts and my own body. And I didn't even have the language for that. So It's just these conversations are so important, because if somebody doesn't have access to resources like that, then hopefully when they listen to, you know, our podcast, we're, you know, look for resources from your Instagram or your website, then they can start to plant these seeds in their heads And to help themselves as well.
Yeah. Thank you both for sharing that. That was actually the reason why when I reached out, you know, I looked at the name and I was like, oh my God, there's so much shit that I did not tell my mom. And I loved it. And it totally resonated. And I love what you both are doing, because truly this is the space that people need to feel comfortable to speak up, whatever it is, because especially in, you know, our culture, my culture specifically, right? I don't want to generalize here, but speaking up is not a normal thing. We are so used to being obedient, right? Like air quotes, being obedient requires you to be like whatever version parents wants us to be. Like for me, it was like staying quiet, playing it safe, you know, doing whatever they wanted. And that for me led me to a place of people pleasing. And, you know, I grew up with this like hyper awareness of like what people wanted, because it was my survival tactics. And I had no clue about any of this. Like I just naturally like became that version, right? And it's so ingrained in my identity. And it's like now, you know, it's the good news is like, hey, I'm happy it gave me the ability to learn how to be compassionate and empathetic to people, but almost sometimes to a point where I don't know how to separate how to like be there for other people, but also like set boundaries for my own emotions, right? Like I take other people's problems and their emotions on my back as if it's mine. And that led me to some very dark places, because I realized that trauma or that those problems are not mine, but I'm trying to be this hero, right? This people pleaser to help them. And I realized that, you know, I need to stay in my own lane, and that I need to also create the boundaries for myself to say no. And that for me, these last few years have been so hard to do. But when we talk about mental health, like, and what I teach people, it's like we have to set boundaries, not just for ourselves, but with other people, because the more you people please and the more you become that version of yourself, you start to lose yourself in a way that you don't even realize. You look in the mirror and you just aren't happy with that version of yourself. And that type of work is like, I call it like, you know, years of unpacking and unlearning the parts of you that aren't really yours, but you've kind of carried on, because in reality, like you're just trying to protect yourself. You're trying to protect yourself from getting hurt or rejected. And that has been like, for me, like an eye-opening experience. Now that I'm able to come out of my own healing journey and observe that, I can now recognize the signs to help other people. And the hardest shift for me, and I'll be very honest, is how do I carry that into motherhood? Because so much of how I mother is this identity blend of how my parents raised me and how I'm like learning to be, you know, adapted to this culture. But then I realized that, you know, with my kids, if I want them to be themselves, I still need, there's like a balance of like, I need to give them the boundaries, but I also need to give them the space for them to be who they are. And it's a very hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned like people pleasing, and then almost to a point where you may end up losing a bit of your own identity, because you're just adapting to what everybody else wants without really considering what is it that you want. And I can totally just see this person over time, when you continue on that journey, you end up losing yourself along the way, and you don't even realize that you have lost yourself, because you have picked up all these other things from around you, trying to people please, trying to, you know, say yes to everything, for example, or be a certain person with different people. Eventually, you don't even know who you are anymore because you're so used to like being in all these other roles that aren't actually yours.
You morph into this person. You kind of take on this identity of what other people think you are. And when you do that, you're like, well, I'm making sure I'm this person other people expect me to be to make them happy. And then you realize, first of all, they don't give a shit. And second of all, now you're super unhappy. And just all around, you're just like, what the hell am I doing this for, right? And like, that's when you go, okay, who the hell am I? And exactly. Why am I even doing this?
You're just so lost. You're just this like lost soul, you know, on this earth. And you're like, who am I?
Who am I? And that's why I love my Oracle card decks. Just kidding. But no, reality, I love it. I love all the woo-woo stuff because that has allowed me to step into that space of knowing who I really am. And people call it soul searching, right? That's like the mainstream like term of soul searching. But yes, absolutely. All those things. I call myself the professional chameleon. Like I was so good at like blending in, right? With like other people because I was at a place where I was groomed to like want to be loved and accepted. So I'm the youngest of three, and my brother and my sister are 8 and 10 years older. So obviously the accident that I was supposed to be a boy, and then, you know, the accident 8 years later, it came out. My parents were like, oh, anyways, so they truly have helped me become this professional chameleon, and unknowingly, right? That was what happened. And I think that's where I was having this identity crisis, because as I grew up and I learned to develop confidence in my own voice and realizing what my soul wanted, it was like very much this cognitive dissonance of like where my parents wanted me to be and where I want to be. And they're not in the same islands of a world, you know? And that for me has been so hard because I so much want to be the obedient good daughter to them. But I don't want to do it at the expense of my own health. And that has been a turning point for me. But a lot of people don't have that luxury and they're still learning, like, how do I separate what my parents want and that identity? And somehow that has become really part of my core identity. And then now, you know, separating that to kind of pivot and turn into this new person. And shedding all of that bullshit, right? That's not yours. And, you know, like a snake, like you're kind of like really just ripping out all these pieces and you're grieving and hurting from all the, like going against this grain, right? Of what people want you to be. That for me is like not, I feel like not, like people don't speak up or talk about it a lot. And I just want to touch on it a little bit just to give people context if they ever go through it, you know. As you morph and change, you're often going to have to go through a grieving process. And that grieving process is very painful. Your body sometimes will fight it because it doesn't feel safe to shed and be this new person. So you're kind of in this like, just imagine like you're being pulled in two different places where you know you need to go to a certain direction or you know you need to go in this way, but you can't because you're so used to being a people pleaser, you know, all this stuff, right? And so you're being pulled back. And so the grieving part is like learning to just let go of that part and being okay with it and just forgiving yourself of all the things you've done to keep yourself safe and forgiving yourself. Yeah. And the reason why I speak up about this now is because I was going through this, all this stuff, and I didn't have the words or the ability to like understand it all. And I was like grieving this part of me that's like, oh, you know, Tam, you did such a great job. You got to this place, you know, you're successful as a mom and all these things. But what has got me here in this space has kept me trapped from being where I want to be to speak up and heal more people. And I have to learn how to let this old identity go so that I can be truly in an embodied place to help, you know, the world. But I can't do that if I'm people pleasing. Like I have to be able to break that. And the grieving part, the hardest part about it is you kind of do it by yourself. And it sucks.
Mm-hmm. And lonely. And it's, you know, anytime you fight against the grain in anything, it's very exhausting. Because you're just climbing uphill and you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
And there are maybe moments when you're just like, oh, you know, and maybe you question yourself. But sometimes, even though you're going uphill and you're carrying a lot of this baggage, it's okay to just take a break, but then keep going afterwards. And once you're there, mm-hmm. once you get past that pain and the grieving, then it can feel a lot better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You get to a point where you start to accept both sides, both the fact that you're grieving, but excited that you are heading in the right direction for once. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part sometimes is like learning to, you know, become your own cheerleader. And, you know, like if I could do a quick plug, I have this book called, sorry, I had to grab it because I was like, what is it? The High Five Habit. And it's by Mel Robbins. And she basically teaches you how to be your own cheerleader. And the reason why a high five is so, you know, effective in doing this self-love, you know, building your own confidence sort of thing is because when you give someone else a high five, you always smile, right? It's like hard for you not to smile. And it's cheesy because like,
I'm imagining it now. I'm
like, have I ever not smiled? Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's like, yeah, exactly. So like, you know, affirmations are great, but when you do it in the mirror, it's so much more powerful because you see yourself. But like, let's be real. It's pretty uncomfortable to stare at yourself unless you're putting on makeup or something, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a hard time like staring at myself. Like, what am I, you know? Anyway, so you start kind of overanalyzing. But if you raise your hand and as you say the affirmation out loud, it's hard for you not to smile. And that positive like look as you stare at yourself and giving yourself a high five and saying the affirmation and doing that mirror work is so effective in building confidence and learning how to speak up and providing yourself that cheerleading moment that you probably need in a day. And that was the first thing I did with my son this year, which was, you know, how do I help build my own confidence, but take him with me in this journey? And we do it together. And it's great to see that, you know, he kind of learns, like kids obviously learn from what you do, not what you say, right? They just follow you. And we have this picture where we both like high five and he's truly smiling from a place of like genuine, you know, I'm truly authentically happy. And so am I. But it was so hard in the very beginning to be like, I high five myself in the morning. Yeah. But the more I did it, the more I started to recognize like and say to myself, you know, Tam, you're tired today, but I'm so proud of you for getting up 5 a.m. to go work out. You know what I mean? And like you becoming that cheerleader and voice for yourself. Mm. So quick plug for Mel Robbins, and I hope you guys check it out.
We'll link the book in the description. What I really loved is that you gave yourself the space to recognize and acknowledge when you're not feeling so great during that high five. And then comes the affirmations of like, hey, you are doing so great because of XYZ. And I think it's the balance. It's not just like all this positivity, because I think toxic positivity is a thing. I think there can be just too much of just hyper-focusing on all the good, happy, joyful, like rainbows and butterflies and unicorns. What I really appreciate is like accepting, acknowledging, and being okay with, hey, I'm feeling a bit tired today, but I'm excited to be chatting with Tam about like being in the middle generation and mm-hmm. how to balance that role. And, you know, because as humans, we're going to go through all different sorts of emotions and feelings throughout even a day, right? Let alone mm-hmm. tomorrow or next week or the week after that. Like it changes all the time, we need the space and the ability to acknowledge that we can feel all these spectrums of things and it's okay.
Yeah. I love what you said about space, because a lot of people, myself included in this journey, we're so used to plugging in that space in the void, right, with things to do. And, you know, born and raised in Silicon Valley, like you kind of keep going. You don't know how to create the space to give yourself time to really be with the emotion. And that's the thing about healing, you know, like sometimes an emotion comes up, there's a few stages. A lot of people, when they feel an emotion, they start to retract, right? Or they start to like go into this fixing mode, like, oh, I need to fix my emotions. I need to fix why I'm feeling this way, you know? Or they start to push it down and say, you know what? I'm too busy right now. I don't have time to deal with this anger or whatever's going on right now. So I'm just going to push it away for a second, right? And you know, and another is like keeping myself busy with and distracted and working and alcohol or whatever it is, right? Whatever your vice is, to like not deal with it. And it's because the space, when people have this space and time, it's scary. It's scary for them to like be alone with their emotions because they have no idea what to do with it. And the reason why I bring this up is because I was very much like, everyone has a vice, right? Everyone has a way to like deal with their emotions. Mine was working. Like I just constantly worked and overworking. And then after work, you get stressed out. So you're going to go drink some alcohol or like you're going to go. And for me, it was like emotional eating, which is why I love Food Adventures, right? Just like constantly feeding and putting all this stuff in my body because I didn't want to feel. I was trying to numb the pain for a long time. And a lot of people do because it's scary to be to deal with it and be with it. And the truth is you have 60,000 thoughts a day. 80% are negative. 80% of your 60,000 thoughts are negative. And then on top of that, you're not even... I know, let's just... Yeah,
that's 48,000. That's 48,000 like, negative thoughts.
What the fuck?
That's a lot of negative thoughts.
It's a lot of negative thoughts. A lot of them are repetitive from the past, you know, just whatever that has happened to you, right? Those are programs that are in your headspace. And 95% of the time, you're not even consciously aware that you have those thoughts. Isn't that freaking crazy? Like, let's just pause for a second.
Oh
let's
my
just
God.
Think
yes.
about this. Yes. So if you have all these thoughts that are running your brain and running how, you know, how you behave and act and how you feel, if you guys have seen the movie, what's that word? What's that movie that on Disney, The Emotions? Inside Out.
Pixar. Truly. Yeah.
Oh my God. So good. We were watching with my son yesterday and I was like, this is exactly what's going on in my brain.
I love
like,
that movie.
There's the joy, the sad, right? And just like every, so in the movie, there's like a ball that comes out, right? The ball that comes out that, you know, whatever emotions that you have and it's stored in your body. So think of your brain like that. We have all of these little balls of emotions that are stored in your body. And what happens is that it creates a framework for you of how you should see the world. And if you're not aware of it, if you don't bring awareness to what's going on, and if you don't realize that 95% of your thoughts are like unconsciously, you're just not even aware of it and majority of it, it being negative, right? Like it's no freaking wonder that we're always reacting. And if we don't give ourselves the space to let it out and we keep suppressing it, you know, is it true that sometimes you feel like the same things are happening over and over and over? And for me, that was it. It was like, why do I keep feeling shitty? Well, let's not deal with it. And then I'm going to go like eat so I don't feel it or, you know, work or, you know, drink so I don't feel it. And then it keeps coming back up. And I'm like, dude, I thought I just dealt with this by eating or drinking or hanging out with friends and being distracted, you know? Yeah.
So numbing, distracting, trying to fix it. See, like
– and we don't realize that it's like every time we push it away, it like comes back harder because
oh my God.
There's like this like – it's like an emotional debt and the interest builds. So the more you push it away, the harder it comes back to hit you. And we don't realize that until it actually happens and we're like, oh, fuck, I fucked up.
See, that was Angie's finance background just like seeping into
what? Of the interest?
The accruing the emotional interest. It was like, come pay me.
Oh my God, I love it. I love that.
Into me and
yes, it's a compound interest of not dealing with your emotions. That's truly what happens. The reason why I want to bring it up is because part of the stigma is, and in my culture is like, hey, you're being too emotional. Like, stop it. Right? Mm-hmm. Or you're too sensitive, stop it, right? And it's the emotional, like our emotions are actually like a compass. It's supposed to guide you to where you need to be. But if you suppress, right? If you're so used to suppressing and pushing it away, how can you know which direction to go?
No wonder we're all feeling lost.
I love that. I love that analogy. I love analogies. Like every episode, I try to work some analogy into it. And that compass one, I love it. I know we're pivoting a little bit, but you went to therapy. You told your dad about it. He really shut you down about it. And this was when you were in your 20s. And then when you had your first son, Lucas, you decided to go back to therapy again. Does your dad know about it now? Or does your mom and dad know about it now?
No, they don't. Yeah, they don't. And I didn't share that with them for the fear of both like the shame that they would place on it, but also the shame possibly of how I would feel. And this is all speculation, right? Nothing's confirmed. Like, but in my mind, I couldn't open myself to share that with them again. So I went to therapy, and this is a great pivot because this is where we'll bring in the woo-woo stuff for all those that are listening and that are interested. I did go to therapy for a period of time when, you know, I was going through postpartum. I was very against like taking anything, you know, because very much, you know, the world is like, here's a magic pill, you know, take it and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. Everyone needs something, right? But for me, I chose not to because I wanted to deal with it myself. And when I was going through therapy, something about therapy itself, it was great awareness. And I call it the top-down healing, where it's all about like talk therapy, and they help you take these, you know, frameworks to help you understand what's going on. But the understanding of what was going on didn't make me feel better. And that was the reason why I actually stopped therapy, because they said there must be something else out there. And I refused to take something because I knew that there was something more and something that my soul was like a path that it was trying to take me. And what I realized that where it was taking me was down the spiritual path. I was going through a huge spiritual awakening, and it was through me going through like, hey, I'm tired of going to therapy. Is there anything else? I found alternative healing through Reiki and my spiritual path. And I'm so glad I did it because it is the catalyst that has completely changed not just my trajectory of where I want to be in my life, but also how I serve and help other people. Mm-hmm. And it's been this beautiful, like, awakening. And I'm so glad that it led me down this path. And I wanted to share that for those who are listening, because sometimes you don't realize, kind of like the movie Soul, like your soul picked all the stuff that has happened to you. And I'm sorry, I'm like going through a bunch of Disney movies because we're going through a bunch with my son. And, you know, Soul came up because it's like your soul, for better or worse, you have to thank your soul for this. It picked all of this bullshit that you're supposed to deal with. And it was always meant to lead you down a certain path. And for me, it was to learn how to speak up and be myself so that I can then be a voice for other people in the community who may not necessarily have not just the words, but being able to identify like what they're going through and move past that and giving themselves a chance to truly come home to who they really are. And that for me has been just a beautiful awakening and journey. So that's kind of where my path has been led. My parents do not know anything I do. So the shit I don't tell my mom, I don't tell my mom anything about any of this stuff, because they probably were like, what? But it's kind of like, you know, I guess Buddhism, Zen, whatever you want to call it, right? Where there's always this belief of a higher being out there that supports you. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
And I almost think of it as like you not telling your parents is a form of boundaries, you know, that you are protecting your parents because you know it could hurt them, or, you know, so in a way, you not sharing is a way that you are loving your parents by protecting them and drawing the boundaries for both them and yourself too. It's a protective thing for you as well, right? To have boundaries and space, and your mental health journey and your wellness journey, you need to have that space without your parents in it,
right? Yeah.
Angie and I are both, we both go to therapy. So, and we've talked about therapy on our show many times, and we're big proponents of doing therapy, but we always emphasize like there are so many different methods of going through this journey, and you have to figure out what can work for you, right? And, you know, it's not like one person's method is going to work for you. These are just an options. Like, hey, here, listen, these are all the different options available. First of all, let's like destigmatize all the different options. Okay. Yes. And then there's this like giant menu. Try some. You might find one immediately. You might not. You might got to go through and try a few other flavors. And then until you finally come to be like, hey, this actually resonates with me a lot more. And it sounds like for you, Tam, is that therapy almost gave you the why, but it didn't really give you the how, right? So it was great starting point, some foundational work. And even the fact that you were ready to even go back to therapy is like a big step forward. And that started the journey, or restarted the journey again. And you're like, okay, well, now I get why, but like what do I do with this information now, right? Like, how do I move on? Like, how do I, you know, continue this self-growth journey? And therapy wasn't giving you the how. That's what it sounds like. Whereas Reiki was, and, you know, it being in touch with your spiritual side, that did help you find out how to proceed forward in your journey. So I like woo-woo stuff. As someone who's like trained in science and goes to therapy, I love woo-woo things. And I was just talking to my other friend like last night. We were talking about religion and spirituality. And I grew up in a Buddhist family. Well, my mom is Buddhist and my dad is just nothing. So I was more in tuned in, like, you know, going to do Buddhist practices, even though I have no idea what I was doing, right? But I just do them because my family is doing them. I will go to temple on New Year's and, like, you know, I will learn certain mantras and blah, blah, blah. And even though I can't explain it, and even though I didn't understand the stories, like, I feel at peace. Like, I feel an affinity to the religion, right? Or I feel an affinity to Buddha. And for me, it was like Gunyam. And I can't explain that. And, you know, sometimes we do things for, like, feng shui. So we'll light incense for all the different deities. And my Western side of me is like, this is ridiculous. Like, this doesn't make any sense, right? But then my spiritual side is like, you know what? Like, why doesn't it make sense? Like, the universe is pretty confusing, you know? Who am I to say this doesn't make sense? And if I feel good about it and I'm not harming anybody, then, like, I'm going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us more about, you know, your journey with Reiki and how that is incorporated into your practice.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you shared all that, I was like, I need to go light my incense really quick because I need I need a little bit more of that. So I honestly stumbled upon it literally by accident. It just said alternative healing. And I remember going into the room with this practitioner, and she kind of put her hands on top of me, and she would do light touches. And as she did, I felt this warm transfer of energy from her to me. And she's basically just channeling literally the universe's energy through her hands to me. And as she did, all the things that I felt started to, like, it's like the, you know, like there's like, when you go to the beach, there's like lots of waves. It started to like slow down and very like calm, just like calmed my entire body. And I was like, I don't know what the hell she just did, but whatever she did, I want more of that, you know? And when you talk about like alternative forms of healing and therapy, right? Absolutely. I think of like the buffet, right? You go to a buffet, everyone can choose what they want. But it's also the awareness, like, is there something else in this buffet that I'm not seeing? And I think for me, Reiki and all the spiritual like practices are so much, there's actually a lot of different types of alternative healing that I wasn't aware of. And whatever she did, I was like, this is so amazing. Like, I want to keep feeling like this every day. So I kept going to her. And we not only talked through what was going on, but she helped me through kind of this hands-on like healing approach to process, because the emotions were so trapped in my body. I had no words to like put to the name or to the feeling. And I was so much in my head about the emotion, I couldn't drop into my body to feel it. So Reiki just allowed me to like shut my mind off and go straight into the feeling zone and like calmed all the feelings. And now that I do Reiki for other people and I teach it, I'm happy to do it for you ladies, by the way, so you both can feel what it, the amazing feeling. It's, and I can do it virtually or you can do it in person, right? It doesn't really matter. But truly, you come from this deep place of like calm and peace. And from this place of peace and calm, you can then start to understand and observe what's going on and hear your voice. So that's Reiki in a nutshell. It's really channeling and using the universe's life energy that's truly around you. A lot of people just don't know that it's there. And Reiki was the beginning of my healing journey. And now that I'm teaching it and sharing with other people, what I've learned about healing, like, very much like therapy is this top-down approach, which is absolutely needed to understand, having the knowledge, right, to understand how you're feeling. But Reiki is like this energetics piece that's really around you, using that energy to heal yourself. And then now I'm incorporating breath work, and breath work is truly a bottoms-up approach where you just bypass the, you know, intellectual mind of thinking, like, I'm going to think my way through an emotion, right? Or think my way through this problem or whatever. But really come using your body to help you understand the wisdom that's truly there, because you have all the answers. You just don't know you have the answers because you aren't there yet. You don't feel it in your body. So that is, for me, like the spiritualness of like of Reiki and how beautiful this practice is. But more deeply, what I've learned is that the wisdom I was like, I almost forgot about, it was deeply stored in my body. And it came because it came from a place of trauma. When I experienced a lot of trauma as a child, I abandoned my body. And I didn't know that until I started to practice Reiki, mindfulness, breath work, and realized that all of this trauma that I've had, I forgot about that inner child of myself and I just left her there. And now that I'm back and kind of doing the work, inner work to bring her out and let her know that she is completely safe to be who she is, to feel safe, and know that I'm with her, walking with her every step of the way. She's not going to be by herself anymore. I'm now integrating the parts of me that I have lost before, right? I just pushed it away. Now that I've going through this healing journey with Reiki, with all these different tools and modalities, I can start to integrate those pieces and feel whole again. And that's the person you're talking to today.
Well, I think it works.
I'm getting emotional.
You hear so much in your voice. You know, like when you meet somebody, you kind of get that vibe, get that aura from them. And I think the way someone talks is a really big reflection of their inner workings as well. So I think the way you spoke, it was very eloquent, very peaceful, and it made me feel calm listening to you.
Mm.
Awesome. I didn't feel calm. not to say it wasn't calming, but I felt a lot of emotions come up for me because of all these key words that you use, like trauma in your childhood, you know, finally bringing out that inner child and almost like giving her this massive hug and telling her that it's okay, you are now safe. You weren't taken care of perhaps during that traumatic time, mm-hmm. but now I'm here to take care of you and I'm going to walk with you. And there were parts, you know, that were lost, but now we're going to find those and be whole again together. And that made me want to cry. I am curious though, Tam, your inner child, you know, what was going on there and what were some of those traumatic memories?
Oh man, we're going deep today.
Welcome to Shit We Don't Tell Mom.
Totally, right? This uncomfortableness. Let me just reset a little bit. One of the things I never told my parents, truly, was being bullied when I was young. I was probably in sixth grade and it was, and you know, being you know, at that age, like you don't really have the tools to really speak up to. And I think also the way, like, in the Vietnamese culture, we just learn not to speak up. We normalize not speaking up. So I think that behavior just carried in. So I never told my parents that I was bullied at a young age. It was probably around sixth grade. And at that time, like AOL Instant Messenger, for those that can remember what that is, or AIM, right? You know, I remember getting like chats, like random chats, random people would ping me and they would call me names, you know, and bully me, you know, and saying like, you know, you're an African black creature, because I'm actually a dark Vietnamese person. So people are like, and that was like the term they called it, ABC, African black creature. So they would call me that all throughout middle school. Yeah. And I very much wore that on my, like, that kind of put my shield up. And I never really told, actually, you know, now that I think back to it, I don't know if I ever told my friends. And it was one of my friend's brother that was doing that.
Oh my
and
God.
He told all his friends. And it made me feel very insecure, you know, all throughout middle school and high school. I very much felt like unaccepted and unloved for who I was or who I am. And it stuck with me, you know. That layered with how my parents are very much a tiger, you know, tiger parents, right? Traditional tiger parents. There's just a lot of unpacked, like, trauma that I went through with how they raised me. And I'm thinking of a story to tell without going too deep or not extending this podcast too much, but I'm happy to unpack more if it's helpful. It was in high school, I remember, like, you know, high school love, right? I was in this relationship. And, you know, my parents were very much like, you can't have a boyfriend. You can't, you know, all this stuff because you're going to get pregnant and, like, drop out of high school, right? Like, all the worst things that they think of, they kind of projected. And I think because I was in this relationship, you know, I thought I was obviously in love with this person, right? And my parents, they would put, like, stuff on my computer, like, screen my chats and, like, monitor everything. Yeah, so I couldn't even, like, talk anyway. So they used all that stuff against me. My parents would show up, you know, like when you watch Turning Red?
Yes.
Okay, the moment when the mom was at the school, that was my dad. Was my dad, literally. And it was, like, kind of, like, peeking to make sure I wasn't, you know, like, doing things, you know. And I'm like, dude, I'm, like, not dumb, right? But my parents would just, like, be so controlling about it. Like, I could never be standing next to a guy because they would think that was my boyfriend or whatever. I couldn't have study groups. I never slept over at people's houses. I didn't go to most of the dances in high school because of, you know, my parents were just, like, super controlling and crazy about it. And literally that control, like, them being so controlling and not knowing how to trust me, I just didn't learn how to trust myself when I made decisions. So that was, like, an example of the trauma that I went through with my parents and being bullied. Like, that just, I don't know how to say this, but, like, I became so insecure. I was insecure from how people bullied me, and I was insecure because my parents didn't trust me. And then on top of that, they would always, you know, say, like, hey, you know, you're not doing enough, or, you know, like, you're always fat, right? All this stuff, right? So, like, that type of thing really just impacted my ability to be confident in myself. And no matter what I did, I never felt like I was good enough. And it literally drove me to a place of burnout where I was overexerting myself. Again, going back to the people-pleasing tendencies, that's what I did. I overworked to stay distracted, to not deal with all of this baggage that I had way underneath, right, from how my parents raised me and treated me. And I never felt accepted. And it was hard to share this with my friends. They know about it, obviously, but it was hard because they didn't understand how my parents could treat me the way they did. But I always felt like the black sheep with my friends because my friends could go out and do all these things, but I was at home, you know, and with my books and all that stuff, right? And I spent many, many years, like, blogging it on my Zanga post, right? Like, about how I felt, like, trapped and not being able to be myself and so suppressed to be who I was. And the version you see now, obviously, and that you are hearing now, has done the work to really overcome that. But I still feel like I'm unpacking 30 plus years of that, you know?
Yeah. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing that story with us. And I think the unpacking and the learning and the growing, that's a forever thing because we're constantly growing. We're constantly discovering things about ourselves. We're learning new things. So then our identities will change based off of the things that we learn. So that work continues. But I also want to just, like, recognize and thank you again, sharing that story, but recognize the work that you've already done to be who you are today. And
yeah, you know, thank you. Thank you for seeing me, for also creating a space for women like me, moms like me, to speak up, because speaking up is, again, like, not a normal thing in the culture, and feeling safe to speak up is just a whole other thing. But it's the space that you both have created for me to allow me to be myself. So that for me has been just an incredible experience. So thank you both.
Thank you. All this, like, oh.
I all think, the emotions.
I know. And I think in so many ways, like, despite all the trauma and being isolated and being alone, not being able to share with your friends or your family, it was also a way that you were, I think, protecting yourself, because there is shame and judgment when you share with friends or family. They may judge differently. And I think a lot of people who have had childhood bullying, I have also experienced childhood bullying in different contexts, but, like, I don't want to talk about it with my friends, especially at that time, because it is, like, I don't want to be the weird one out. Like, I already feel like I'm the odd one when I'm already in the group, right? Because of my family upbringing or whatever it is. So why would I openly state that, oh, I am the odd one out? Like, people are, you know, targeting me and calling me these names. Like, why would I want to give them more of a reason to make me feel like I shouldn't belong in this
circle, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I think what you just said very subtly, I just want to go back to that. It was, I think it's the word shame. Mm. People feel ashamed, you know? And it's, here's the thing that I've learned too. It's like, if you knew you couldn't fail, right, what would you do in your life? It was a question that was really hard for me because there is so much shame when you fail. Being Vietnamese American, being Asian, like our parents is like, if you don't win, right? If you don't get that A, like you're not great. Like that word shame is such a thing that I want to normalize. Like, how can we normalize the shame and the guilt that we feel every day, you know, when we don't do things the right way, right? And I think what it where it begins really is to say it out loud. Like, let's just say it out loud. Like, I feel ashamed, right, of that part of my life. I felt so much shame growing up, being dark-skinned Vietnamese, possibly not as skinny as my parents want me to be. There was so much shame, and I carried that with me into motherhood, and I operated from that place of shame because it was what I was told and what I truly believed for most of my life. And I think what set me free from the shame was not just openly talking about it and saying I have or I feel shame. Sorry, I shouldn't say I am, you know, it's just like I feel the shame. But it was the work around rebuilding and reprioritizing myself that I could truly forgive myself for the shame. And it was everything I did up to this point was just to protect myself, like you said, but it was my survival tactics, right? This is how I survived in this culture. And now, like looking back and going back to like thinking about my parents, I think what they've done up until this point really, and maybe for the rest of their life that they may not realize, is that this is their survival tactics. They are surviving, and this is so deeply embodied and ingrained in their cells that they just don't know any other way. And I've learn to forgive them for that, that what they did to control everything and like making sure, you know, I was safe, right, from their point of view. All the things that they did, as hurtful as it is, I know that they did it out of a place of love, even though they're trying to control everything, right? But the control part of it now, like looking back, is like they controlled all these things because they wanted to feel safe. And now having this like 360 degree view of everything, I can say like, I just, you know, we just got to let that go, right? Yeah. The shame, the guilt, and the stories, because the more we become like attached to that as part of our identity, it is so hard to change. We just can't. And so I just want to touch on those pieces a little bit, because it is so normal to feel the shame. It is so normal to feel guilty for prioritizing your own mental health, right? But you have to, you absolutely have to, because there's no other way for you to, like, no one's going to do it for you. No one's going to do it for you. No one's going to tell you that. Like, we have to take the responsibility now as adults to just do the work.
That's the hard part. But hey, like, we're still trying to get the hang of it. You know, Tam's still trying to get the hang of it. Myself and Christy, we're all still trying to get the hang of it, but you can just, the only thing you can do is keep practicing.
Yep, absolutely. Keep trying every day. And 2 steps forward, 1 step back is completely normal, because healing is really non-linear. In school and what we're taught in society, it's like 1 + 1 = 2, very linear, right? Mm-hmm. But growth and healing is absolutely non-linear. So for those who love math, right, non-linear, just like really think about that. Like, it's very much this ziggy zig thing that like they, some of the stuff may not ever connect, and it doesn't even matter. The point is, we just got to forgive ourselves that this is just all this shit's happening, and be okay with the chaos and know that the chaos and how we feel is not who we are.
Dang, the chaos is not who we are. And forgiving your family, recognizing that they were just, again, doing the best that they can with the resources and tools that they have. Yes, it has caused harm and pain for us as their offsprings, but who we are now, trying to take care of our inner child, that's separate from forgiving mm-hmm. our parents. And those yeah. are two different things. And but the work needs to be involved in all of those. You know, in yes. forgiving, that is work. In taking care of your inner child, that is work. In the growth and identity discovering and, you know, the healing, all of that is work.
Mm-hmm.
are you feeling about reading some oracle cards?
Yeah, I'm stoked. Have you guys both ever gotten like an oracle card / tarot card reading before?
No. So what we're doing now is Angie and I are going to do some work, I guess. Learning a little bit more about our own identities live in this episode. Yes. So is when you do readings, is it usually for another person or is it for yourself as well? Like this?
Both. Yeah. So I start doing it for myself. So, you know, like, you know, like mindfulness and meditation, mm-hmm. like, okay, it's dropping in into yourself. So once you do a little bit of that, I do a lot of readings for myself when I feel lost or stuck mm-hmm. or I'm just like all in the head and I'm like, oh, I need something. So I'll do a little bit of like a short meditation and then I'll do Reiki and then I'll go straight into a card reading for myself. And then I just kind of use that to like journal. So it's almost like a good way to reflect. It's like, all right, what's the message for today? Like I ask very open-ended questions like, what is the message of the universe? What does it want me to know today? And I'll write it down and I'll just journal on it for a few moments. And then I've been doing it for, a few years now. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice if you look back, there's like sometimes consistent things, like you kind of pull the same card sometimes. So it's a great reflection tool. So that's kind of what I do.
I do it for other people, obviously. I'm super into it right now.
So I didn't realize I was doing this probably at a very young age, like sixth grade. I remember going to Marshall's. My parents, you know, like, hey, just go run around, do your thing, right? And I picked up a card deck and it was called I Ching. And I Ching was like the very first Oracle card deck that I ever picked up. It's like, okay, cool, whatever, right? I'm going to bring it back home. And I remember doing card readings for myself and for my friends for a while. And I pretty much like packed that in a box for a while until I had my spiritual awakening again. And I was like, oh my God, I've been doing this my whole life and I forgot about it. So it's one of those tools that let's just destigmatize a little bit, right? This is not about fortune telling. This is not about like, you know, the future state. Very much it can be if that's what comes out, right? But this is just really a tool, a resource that you can use to really just understand yourself a little bit better. And that's how I like to frame like a reading, an oracle card reading or a tarot card reading. Obviously, there's a lot of amazing readers out there. For me, the way I like to do it is I pretty much, once I have your permission, right, Angie and Christy, you know, I'll pull a card for you and I'll read it to you and ask you, how does this resonate, right? And sometimes for me, it's just about like tuning into what you need in this moment. And that's how I like to use these cards. So anyone can learn it and do it. And if you're interested, you know, send me a DM at Stigma Free Movement. Just send me a DM if you're interested. Happy to do free readings. I love this stuff and I love teaching it and sharing with people. It's one of the tools I use kind of on a weekly basis. I love it so much that my son and I do it. And I teach him and he's like, Mom, let me do a reading for you.
Oh my gosh.
And he'll like pick a card. Yeah, he'll pick a card for me, pick a card for dad, and pick a card for himself, not knowing. And I think he's just like having fun. And that's the whole point, right? Like, so in all seriousness, it's a fun tool and resource. Let's see where it takes us. Yeah.
I'm very excited. And we're going to link all of your info down in the description. So for our listeners, if you wanted to get a reading from Tam, go check out our show notes.
Awesome. So this card deck is called Work Your Light by Rebecca Campbell. This is probably my second or third deck that I picked up. I got to show you guys my collection. It's kind of crazy because everyone has different decks at different points in time. There's a lot of amazing authors, but something about her deck that just really resonates is the artwork. It's like so beautiful. We got to drop in the show notes for those who are like, hey, I want to check this out. So who would like to go first?
I'll go first. I can go first. I like that.
Okay, Angie, okay, you can go first. All right. Okay, I'll go first.
Okay, Angie. Okay.
There was a period in my life when I was like really lost and I was like grieving. I was like super into astrology. Same thing, like using it not for fortune telling, but for understanding who I am, understanding those around me. So I'm like totally into it.
Yeah, so this would be pretty similar, but just really using like the card as a medium to help you understand yourself better. So with that, let's begin. So just give me a second. I just want to tune into the energy and just drop into that space. And by the way, this is a shit for sure. I do not tell my parents I do. And at work, I'm starting to come out and it's an amazing thing, but I hope that this becomes a normalized tool that everyone can use, truly. Okay, Angie, so... Ooh, okay. So the card is called Imrama and the phrase says, where are you being called to journey to? So I'll send you guys a photo after. It's this beautiful, like, person who's, like, in this body of water, and, like, you see this kind of, like, castle. Feels just, it's so beautiful. So I'd love to read it first, and then we'll talk a little bit about it and unpack. Mm-hmm. You could absolutely ask questions, like, in terms of, you know, before you pull a card, you could just, ask a question. But for me, today I wanted to be a little bit more organic and just see what comes up for the both of us. So just being more of a state of flow. All right. So the Celtic word Imrama means a journey of the soul, a voyage on which we don't know where we are going, but our soul knows the way. If you pull this card, you are either being called on a soul journey or already on one. It could be to a physical, ancient place, or metaphoric. When we journey to places that our soul remembers, a shift takes place, both within us and to the planet as well. You're being called to journey to a place that is sacred to your soul. Perhaps it is to a journey to the world's sacred sites, or you're being called to cross the country, climb a mountain, lie on a desert floor, or drink from an ancient well. There are places to see and old friends to meet. I see spontaneous pilgrimages in your future. If a physical voyage is impossible, journey through the portal of your heart. Follow the invisible soul trail and be willing to explore. Maybe read a book or watch a movie about a sacred time or place. Or perhaps you're being called to study an ancient lineage or body of work. Whatever your circumstances, your soul is ready to journal deep. So this is the thing that, like, they always provide, like, a little thing to read or do after. So if you just want to repeat after me, Angie, and then you can let me know what your thoughts are. But it says, may seeds of light...
May seeds of light
long ago planted begin to rise. And then close your eyes for this one. It says, okay. I am ready
to remember ancient secrets
from lands that my soul knows. From times past. May I be held. By the ancient lineages. That my soul has severed. And remember that I don't have to do it all alone. And that's it.
I have goosebumps because I actually am on a journey. I've been reading more into Buddhism, like the Dharma of Buddhism, and reading more into just a lot of things like that. And so my grandma is a Buddhist. She is probably the only person in my family that is religious in that matter. And her father, so my great-grandfather, was actually a Taoist priest. So there's a lot of that type of blood in me. So I got goosebumps when you were reading all about this, like, ancient lineages and ancient texts. And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I'm doing right now. And not like today, but like it's what I've been working on over, I would say, probably like the past 2 years or so, but it's got off to a really slow start. And more recently, because the dust is kind of settling in the other big parts of my life, like moving in with my boyfriend, getting a puppy, like these things are starting to slow down, like it's being incorporated into my life, the dust is settling. So now I'm going back to that journey of like what I was doing before. So this kind of is like motivating me even more to kind of, you know, do it, like to continue doing it.
Thank you for sharing.
Wow. Yeah, so it totally really gave cool. Totally gave me goosebumps.
And the thing is, the goosebumps, the sensations that are happening is that your soul feels recognized.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, it's like, oh, you saw me, like, yeah, you were speaking my language and you're saying the things that, it's like a moment of validation for yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So wherever your journey is, your soul knows the way. So just allow yourself to be with that.
That's so lovely. I had this whole imagery of like, you know, your soul as this like ball of yellow light, and then it just like glowed brighter when you had a goosebump and it kind of like vibrated. This is Christy's interpretation of a soul.
Okay, Christy, it's your turn.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I'm laughing because I just got this card.
Like for yourself?
The initiation. Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. It's called the initiation. It's called rite of passage, crossing the threshold. So you could see like these really dark mountains, but inside of it, you're being initiated into such a beautiful place. But the path to get there is a little rough. So let me read. All right, so here we go. Some of the most sacred initiation chambers and temples look scary from the outside, but are breathtakingly beautiful on the inside. This represents the journey that the soul pilgrim is required to take to reach somewhere sacred. But only the initiated can enter. And perhaps that's where you're at right now. You are being tested and initiated because you are headed somewhere sacred. Initiations require that we cross the threshold from one world or state of being to the next. We're being called to face what scares us and have to be willing to lose it all in order to gain a new way of being, of safety, of security, of depth, and of meaning. Initiations, like rites of passage, mark the shift from one age to the next and can take place because of emotional turmoil, great loss, grief, or devastation. But it is through the seemingly hardship that our heart will crack open and our spirit is invested to step forward. We take the sacred voyage into more of who we are and who we came here to be. It can be painful and scary, but once we begin the journey, we can be more ourselves than ever before. If you are in the middle of an initiation right now, you will get through it, and one day soon, you will bless the thing that broke you down and cracked you open because the world needs you open. You are going somewhere sacred, and it will be worth it. And guess what? You're closer than you think.
So our listeners can't see me, but...
You know, a lot of times we associate crying with like something negative.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm not feeling like sadness. I feel scared but excited at the same time. And I think as you were reading and describing that the journey is going to be hard and it's going to be painful, but there is like a blessing on the other side, you know, and that journey is well worth taking. And earlier on in the show, I had just described climbing up a hill to get to a place where we can feel better. And then this card shows up today. I think just listening to how it was being described, I felt very emotional. And that's why these tears showed up. And where I'm at in life, I think there are a lot of unknowns coming up. And I think that speaks to what the card was saying. I have a lot of unknowns in my career, like where am I going? What am I going to choose to do? Because I'm about to graduate from grad school. Mm-hmm. I'm having some unknowns in terms of my relationship status and what's going on there. And I had some unknowns of even where I'll be living, like what city am I going to be living and what is that going to look like? My whole living situation, what is that going to look like? So there's a lot of things coming up and it is scary, but also I am excited, even though I know it's going to be a tough journey. I can't wait to see what's in store, you know?
Yeah. Everything around you is that darkness, like in the picture, but you know that where you're going is so much so beautiful. It's like this oasis that's like waiting for you. But you know, to get there, it's going to be painful. And it requires, if it's okay to share, like possibly shedding, right, Christy? Just like a little bit of the shedding of what got you here, where you're at now, is not going to get you to where you want to be. And it's the unknown that's the scariest, because, you know, there is no rule book. There's no rule book or playbook that's been written to take you to where you want to be. So guess what? You're lucky to write that yourself.
despite what our parents try to give us in terms of the book of life, these are all the check boxes you got to do.
Exactly.
And then we look at the book and we're like, I don't really like it. So what do we do now?
Toss it and write another one.
Yeah, write your own. Go where your soul is vibrating the most. Thank you for that. That felt really powerful for me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
While that was happening, at first I was like, okay, let's see what it would be like. You know, like I was trying to appeal to my skepticism as well, right? Because like you said, this is a medium for kind of helping us form our own thoughts. So I was like, okay, let's pretend like I'm Christy right now. And like what you had read did nothing for me, but it had affected Christy so much. And then what you read for me was so relatable for me that it's like, it's very cool. Like, you know, I don't know why it works, but it does. But it doesn't matter, right? Like for some things, you know the why. Like going to therapy, you know why you feel this way. You know why. But sometimes that might not be enough because you need to know how. This one, we don't know why. But if it helps, then why would we dismiss it, right? Like, right. I think that's something that a lot of people in the West have a hard time grasping. Is that they both the why and the how. But sometimes one isn't enough and sometimes one is just enough.
Exactly. Oh, I love what you said. So final thoughts on this topic, I promise. Our parents, society, the world, the logical side of us wants to have reasoning and like the ability to like connect these dots, right? But in the spiritual world, it really doesn't matter. It's about allowing and surrendering truly, right? To just be in that state of flow. And it's so hard, right? Because our logical side's like, I need to know all this stuff and I need to like have logic and reasoning to understand why all this is happening in my daily life when I'm going through an emotion or when stuff is happening to me. But what if we were to take a step back and allow what's meant to happen to us, knowing that the universe is giving this to us for a very good reason. And sometimes it's not about knowing the why or how or whatever it is, but just surrendering that it's happening and just being present with that. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of people want abundance, right? And it's like, I want all these things, but it's like, you have to truly surrender sometimes to what the universe has in store for you to attract the abundance and to be in that state of flow. And the reason why the readings obviously are so polar opposite and they're different for each person. And obviously, you know, like I don't know you both other than, you know, like our time through Instagram, right? So obviously this is not like a planned thing, right? I just kind of randomly pick cards for you. But this is truly what the universe wanted you guys to hear. So just surrendering to that and just saying like, we're all in the right place at the right time. And that's all that matters at this point.
Yep. Very, very well said.
I'm just breathing it all in. And I think that's like an excellent way for us to wrap up our episode. Tam, thank you again for sharing your wisdom, sharing your vulnerable stories about your childhood and the journey that you had taken to become who you are today and sharing that with not just us, but also our listeners as well. Where can some of our listeners find you if they relate it to your work, your stories, whatever, to do some card readings themselves?
There you go. If you're interested, you can find me on Instagram. So at Stigma Free Movement or my website, stigmafreemovement.com. You know, I'm excited and I want to do a special thing for your audience listening. You know, if you guys resonate with anything that's been said and shared and talked about today, I'm actually going to be leading breathwork sessions where you can drop in and just be with the body, with emotions, all of that absolutely for free. So if you want to join in on this woo-woo stuff and, you know, have a different tools to use to kind of manage your stress, anxiety, or your emotions, you know, I'm here for it. So that's where you can find me. And thank you so much, Angie and Christy, not only just for, you know, starting and following your gut to create this safe space for people like me to speak up and share, but also just being vulnerable to show the world that it's okay to have all the emotions and know that they're not who you are, but we're just in this, right? And just, so thank you so much for being vulnerable, because I don't know if I would be as vulnerable if you did not create that space for me. I almost feel like it's cathartic and liberating to share it, because that wasn't the intention going into this at all. was like, let's just go with wherever it needs to go. And I don't know if I've ever publicly spoke about my up about my bullying. I kind of share a little bit, but I never go deep because I also don't want the person who had did it to me just to feel shame and guilt or whatever it was, because they probably didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for listening to the Shit We Don't Tell Mom podcast with Christy
and with Angie. Get that uncomfortable shit out in the open with your partner, a dear friend, a trusted family member, and with us.
And as much as we love talking, we also love to listen. Hit us up with any feedback or topics you'd like us to chat about on Instagram at Shit We Don't Tell Mom, or email us at shitwedonttellmom@gmail.com.
Be sure to subscribe and share with your friends.
Bye.
How was the card reading? What do you guys think?
That was really
fun. I'm literally on Amazon right now. I just added it to my cart.
Oh my God.
I'm like, literally, it's in my cart right now, along with 100 pack of garbage bags.
All the necessities that you need.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Should I go on Amazon now too?